Okay, 3, 2.
Extreme Vocabulary is not your typical Word of the Day podcast. We don't just define words, we contextualize them in terms of their history, etymology, politics, and aesthetics. In other words, we look at the culture behind words. Today, we join a conversation with Abe and Aaron. Abe has researched today's word, while Aaron has not. Today's word, stratagem, or, as autocorrect would have it, state gem.
We should also mention that Efren is here with us.
Hey, how's it going? I'll be throwing in a little 2 cents here and there, but I definitely want to hear what you all have to say.
And our Josh substitute is Ash.
Hi.
That was a fine substitute indeed. Can you replace Josh just like always?
No. No one could ever replace Josh.
All right. How are you all doing, by the way?
Doing well.
Aaron.
Thank you.
How are you doing?
As well as can be expected.
That's the question I ask you all the time.
Yes, you do. And I try and mix it up. But today, I'm doing well.
All right. How are you doing,
Ef? I'm among good people.
All right. But we moved on to Ef already.
Oh, excuse me.
How are you doing, Ef?
I'm happy to be around you all. It's fun.
All right. Ash?
I'm great.
All right. Today's word is stratagem. I think I'm pronouncing it correctly.
Yes.
Is there another way to pronounce this word?
Not that I know of.
Stratagem?
Oh, do you want to say the Greek with a Greek accent? Stratigos?
Stratigos?
Yeah. Stratigos. Stratigos, I'm sorry.
No, stratigos is a different word, actually.
It's a general in Greek.
You're, like, jumping ahead of, you know...
I didn't do research, so I don't know what you did.
Okay? You're not supposed to do any kind of research at all.
I didn't. I just know these things because I'm smart.
All right. Anyway,
big brain.
But you're right. We'll get to that word. We'll get to that. That's actually part of like the root word that we have to like break down.
Sorry to ruin the surprise.
No surprise at all. Stratagem. It's a noun. All right. So for those of you who don't know, the OED, the Oxford English Dictionary, is my best friend when it comes to looking up all these words. So it defines it as a skillful military plan, scheme, or approach, especially a trick, maneuver, or ploy designed to deceive or surprise an enemy. That is the, I think, the contemporary definition of the word. I am going to challenge that a bit and think not of stratagem as a kind of trick or maneuver or some kind of like subset of strategy, which is a question we can ask in a bit. But I'm going to challenge it a little bit, and we'll sort of get to that though. But yeah, tell me again if you don't mind repeating the strategos or strategos.
Strategos.
Yeah, strategos.
Yeah.
So what is it again?
The word?
Yeah.
Strategos.
What does it mean?
General.
How do you know that?
Great general, possibly. Strategic general.
The strategic general?
A general that practices strategery.
Right. Okay. So, yeah. So, obviously, the word that is in stratagem is the words...
Strategos.
Strategos. Okay. Because I'm not going to pronounce it correctly. Strategos. Okay, so, and strategos itself is made up of two words. These are two root words, so we have this compound, stratos and egos. So the word, do you know the word stratos? What that one means?
No, because I didn't do research.
Thought you knew everything.
I never claimed to know everything.
I feel like you are the authority among us when it comes to like Roman military history or something like that.
Yeah.
Or even Greek Roman.
I probably just in a past life was one of those guys. That's all it was. I really don't know much.
Yeah.
I can tell you about the ballista all day though.
Yeah, we.
But
yeah.
That was an old episode, so.
Yeah, that's an old episode. And that was really good that you knew that because I didn't. But so you taught me something.
Of course I did.
All right, so so we have two words here, the stratos or stratos, and then the egos.
Anything up in the air?
No, actually, it's kind of a different stratos. Oh. It's so the stratos is that literally means that which is spread out. So you could think of it as a multitude, or in other words, an army. And then we have the word egos, which is kind of also the word Aegon. The word Aegon, of course, meaning a fight or a battle. The Aegos would be the warrior or the battler, whatever word you want to use there, right?
So the tactician.
Yeah, so if you put these two together, right, the Aegos and the Stratos, then you get the warrior who's in charge of this army, or the warrior who's in charge of the multitude. And then from that we get, you know, we change it up a bit and then we get the word stratagem. Okay, so Ashley, you had asked me a word or a question earlier, and then I was hoping you could repeat it.
My question was, is stratagem somehow like a singular? Like, do you have many stratagems for in order to have strategy? Is strategy sort of the, like, at least historically, the sort of plural form of that?
Right. So the question, or a different way to phrase the question, would be to say, what is the difference between strategy and stratagem, right?
That would be a simpler way to ask it, yes, definitely.
Right. Okay. So what I would say at this point is that strategy, well, the dictionary defines strategy as the art of a general, right? His ability to make plans and order the stratos, right? The army, the multitude, and get them to do things for him in battle. And stratagem would be a kind of subset of strategy. So, like, stratagem is a type of strategy, I would say. So I had said earlier that, you know, the stratagem can be considered kind of like trick or maneuver or ploy that's used by, like, the military or whatever, right? So then a trick or a ploy or a maneuver would be a type of strategy you could use in battle.
So the Trojan horse is a stratagem.
Oh. Yes.
But strategy somehow involves, like, keeping banging down the doors, right? Sort of?
Yeah, I think the Trojan horse is specifically a stratagem, right? Because it was a way of deceiving, and I forget my stories here. It was a way of deceiving the Trojans, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so
beware of Greeks bearing gifts.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So and who were these other Greeks, by the way? I forget who they were.
The Greeks inside the horse?
Or? Yeah.
Odysseus, was it there?
Agamemnon.
Was he?
Well, not the specific people, but like the... Oh. Were they Macedonians? No.
No, there was a... It was like an alliance of the city-states.
Yeah.
Just the ones that were all, like, cooperatively, you know, in touch with each other.
It was like all of the non-Trojans across the Mediterranean.
Exactly.
I don't know.
Just non-Trojans?
Yeah, seriously. They were kind of like...
Which involved Macedonians and those in the Peloponnesian Strait... Peninsula and all of them.
See, I'm telling you, this
Sparta,
guy knows
Corinth,
his military history.
Thebes.
Although it's kind of a question whether that's even real military history, but you know,
it's all hearsay.
Yeah. Was the Iliad a real story? Who knows?
Did Homer even write it? That's also a debate.
Yeah. So okay. So we were saying that the horse, the idea of the horse, right, of tricking the Trojans into accepting this horse as a gift is a stratagem, mm-hmm. which is again a type of strategy, mm-hmm. right? I mean, they could have used any other kind of strategies, like the one you mentioned, which is let's just break down the door, or we'll send in spies or whatever it is, right?
Or this is how we are going to keep the army supplied and eating and, you know, sustain this siege,
right? Or
part of a grand strategy.
Yeah, or let's cut off their supplies, right? Their supply lines so that, you know, we can starve them out or something like that.
Right.
So those are all strategies. And again, stratagem is just like one type of strategy. And we do want to kind of talk about, you know, examples of this. So I'm glad we kind of started off with one already. Let's see, where was I at? Oh, so... I had asked Josh earlier if he had read The Art of War by Sun Tzu, and he said no, so he couldn't help me with this. But Sun Tzu had... So I looked up some stuff, you know, very quickly about The Art of War, and it seems that Sun Tzu had this idea that, you know, the supreme art of war is to subdue the enemy without fighting, but also that war itself is nothing but a big game of deception.
A series of feints.
Yeah.
And maneuvering. Yeah.
So if you think about war as a kind of game of deception, then stratagem really becomes the main strategy and not just like a subset mm-hmm. of strategy. Mm-hmm. And this is where I had mentioned that I wanted to think of stratagem, you know, upside down. Not to think of stratagem as a type of strategy, but as the supreme strategy that has been used in wars throughout our history, as the thing that has allowed people to win time and time again. And hopefully we can get some of that, those examples going. But anyway, I don't know if you had any questions so far. Or
well, so with something like a giant show of military force, like dropping the bomb on Hiroshima, right? That in some ways is not deceptive, right? Because you're like, no, we have all this weaponry, we're going to destroy you totally. Like, does that, would that qualify as stratagem? And isn't, is what stratagem is kind of the feint that, like, we will do that again? You know what I mean? Is that, like, the sort of groundwork for the sort of stratagems that we do now? I'm thinking in particular of North Korea at the moment.
So, as far as dropping the bomb, the nuclear bomb in Japan, something I remember being told about this was that the guy who flew the plane that was carrying those warheads didn't know what he was carrying or dropping. He thought they were regular, you know, like bombs or something. And so,
speaking of which,
was maybe that was the flyer right now, right? So he himself didn't know, so that the plan to drop the bomb actually required some amount of deception, whether in the, you know, players themselves, or, you know, or in terms of, you know, deceiving the enemy. But in this case, of course, it was within the army itself, right? And it has something to do with deceiving, like, the person themselves who needs to drop the bomb, because you don't want that person's conscience kicking up at some moment and saying, like, I can't do this.
Which is so crazy if you think about it, because so much of the military is about desensitizing people so that you can say, go shoot them, and they'll be like, yeah, that's a great idea, I will definitely do that.
But yeah, and for some reason in this case they're like, well, this dude might have second thoughts, so we don't want that.
It's an unprecedented thing too as well, so, you know, I can understand why. It doesn't make it right.
Yeah, I think so, right? That it was the first time that the U.S. would do this, or any, like, big country would do something at this scale, right?
It ushered in a historical era, the atomic age.
Yeah.
That's a pretty big deal.
Yeah, the guy who dropped the bomb, the guy who was flying the plane, like,
you should have researched his name.
He ushered in this.
He was flying the Enola Gay, that's all I know.
Wow, you know that.
Put me in on a trivia team. I'll slaughter.
But can we really give him that agency if there's been a stratagem that has said he had no idea? Like, is he responsible for that?
That is the stratagem.
Oh.
To trick the guy to do it.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, there you have it.
All right. So, I mean, we can kind of argue around
this question again.
But what I kind of wanted to get to were some examples of things that I might call stratagems, and I kind of have examples from all over the place, really. Number one, because I don't know a lot about military history, and most people who are, like, amateurs of history, that's the thing they study, right? Like, military history, or that's the thing they want to know about. But I actually don't know a lot about that, so I have examples from kind of all over the place. So, one that I'll mention, do any of you know about Pancho Villa's military strategies?
No.
No?
Somewhat. If I remember correctly, he would cross-border raids, correct? Was this strategy?
Yeah, there was one cross-border raid that got him into a lot of trouble, actually.
I thought there were several, and then the last one before, you know, they sent Blackjack Pershing after him. That was the one that, like, you know, broke the straw on the camel's back. I assumed he did it several times.
He had done it several times, but yeah, the one you're thinking about is the one that happened in, Columbus, New Mexico, I think.
Sounds about right.
And so he raided the town for, like, supplies, And then he crossed back into Mexico, and that pretty much, like, triggered the U.S. Yeah. And so they sent out, like, some of their best men in what they call the punitive expedition to go bring back Pancho Villa to the U.S. and, like...
They sent a guy with the nickname Blackjack after him.
You know what? One of the people that was involved in the punitive expedition was Teddy.
Teddy, yeah, I know.
Teddy Roosevelt.
I was just going to say that, yeah.
So,
Cut his teeth there, yeah.
Yeah. The funny thing about that whole thing is that the U.S. sent their best, and they couldn't catch him. Which kind of makes me laugh. But, you know, like, he had, like, a lot of protection from the people, you know, like, because the people loved him.
You have the support of the people. You know the terrain. You know, yeah. You're a hardened crew. You can survive for a long time in your home turf, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah, which is one of the tenets of guerrilla warfare, right? Is, like, to, like, move among the people, to, like, hit people when they're not expecting it. So, yeah, it's a stratagem.
Yeah, but well, can you tell me a bit more about guerrilla warfare? Like, how does that work?
Well,
the expert over here.
I kind of dug myself into a corner, but I just remember in when Cher wrote the book on guerrilla warfare, like, he was talking about these different tactics, and the premise was that we can't defeat these imperialist armies using their rules, right? Mm-hmm. So we need to come up with alternative rules. So one of them was moving among the people. So that means you had to, like, forge relationships and be among them. And the second one was, like, yeah, hitting when they're at least expecting it. Just stuff like that. I mean, that's really the only thing I could think of off the top of my head. Though I know, like, during World War II, actually, there was a ton of, like, deception and deceptive moves that were made in Europe.
Even, partisan, like, groups, yeah, from Yugoslavia all the way up to Poland, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, even tactically, though, I think one time they sent a boat with nobody in it or something, or, like, in other words, they would use, like, subterfuge to, like, direct the armies in the wrong direction during World War II.
Is that why the U.S. lost the Vietnam War, by the way? Is it because of, like, guerrilla warfare? I mean, obviously there were a bunch of other reasons for it, right? But, like,
yeah.
Would we count guerrilla warfare?
Oh, yeah. I mean, their supplies came from, you know, across the border and then through the jungles and this series of interconnected tunnels. It was just, you know, it's like, you know, an ant farm. It's, you know, how do you defeat that?
Mm-hmm.
You can't. It's just, they're going to keep getting supplies and troops that way. And, yeah. They didn't know they were trying to fight it in a conventional style of, okay, our forces versus your forces. There is no battle line. There's the DMZ, and that's about it. But they're not in the DMZ. They're all over. They're crossing the border to Laos and Cambodia, and then they're coming back in, and again using these tunnel networks and just popping up and then disappearing into the jungle.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and of course, you know, the support of the locals as well too. They didn't have much of a choice, I'm sure. So yeah, it was a bad situation. It's just unwinnable.
Yeah. Well, I think Pancho Villa had, like, the same support of the people, definitely, and in order not to be caught by the U.S. But I think one of my favorite stratagems from him was that during the Mexican Civil War, he had this infamous hat trick where they would go up into the mountains and they would all remove their hats, you know, their sombreros, and, like, lay them out, like, in a line, you know, and pretend like they were hiding among the rocks. And
would
all
they
that.
Occasionally lift them with a stick?
No, I don't think they were there at all, you know.
Damn, those like bugs, in the cartoons.
Yeah,
damn.
Holding their hats up with sticks. No, but they would lay out their hats, and, you know, the federal army would then come thinking that that's where their position was. And then they, you know, Pancho Villa's armies would, like, come and like, surround them and, you know, attack them. And
you gotta get creative when you don't have the superior force, yeah.
Yeah, I think his trick worked out, like, a few times, you know? And then, of course, the army finally caught on.
Well, World War I happened, and then they had to, you know, abandon ship.
There's one more other strategy that he used, and this one was... It's kind of a crazy one if you really think about it. He would load up... trains full of explosive material. So then what he would do is that when they were about to confront the other army, the train would, like, pull up and just, like, explode. So there was this, like, really massive, like, noise, you know, like this supersonic kind of noise from the explosion of the train that would, like, frighten the federal army, and then that's, you know, Villa's armies would know, like, that was the sign to attack, you know, attack your enemy when they're confused.
Yeah.
And that was another strategy that, like, worked out for him for a while. You know, like, he would keep using it and using it against the federal army in Mexico. All right. So, yeah. So that's Pancho Villa's hat trick.
The hat trick, nice.
I was also asking around if you guys knew something about chess, because I feel like one of its most famous players used stratagems in his games, but...
do you know some of the names of his moves?
No, do you?
No, I wish. I could make up one that I remember from Star Wars. It was from that game that Chewbacca was playing with, was it 3PO or R2-D2? I think it was R2-D2, yeah. Him and Chewie were playing like a version of chess in Star Wars. And then there was a move, supposedly I learned this later, not in the movie, of course. It's called the Ilthamar Gambit. It just sounded like badass. It's like, ooh, I got him with the Ilthamar Gambit. What is that? I don't know. Who cares? It sounds cool.
But you know something about chess, right, Efren?
Why?
Like, more than we do, of course.
I don't know about that.
We're playing checkers, he's playing chess.
But I... hardly. But I do know that, I mean, chess is what's called a perfect information game, meaning that everything is out in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
So the stratagem has to come from...
misdirection.
Like misdirection, leading your opponent on. Whereas a game, they think of a game like poker, which is not perfect information, where you can literally hide things.
Mm-hmm.
So chess requires a different stratagem because of that. Everything's out on the floor, on the visibly. There's no cards or anything that you're holding. Yeah.
Have you played chess?
I'm a dominoes player.
You're a dominoes player?
Yeah.
That's perfect for drinking, but.
Right. I know. Oh, I know.
Yeah, so I kind of think of chess as, like, this game of, like, perfect rationality, right? Like, everybody who's engaged in that game is thinking nothing but rationally, so that... There's that plane again.
That's the NSA. Don't
worry. Okay, yeah. They're on to us. We know their strategies.
Lehman Brothers, we're in your home.
So, yeah, so I think of, like, chess as this game of, like, perfect rationality, right? Like, everyone who plays with it is playing with it, trying to be, like, perfectly logical, right? So that when you finally get to somebody like, you know, a player like Bobby Fischer, right? Who's, like, the grandmaster of chess, right? That, you know, he's played games where nobody knew what he was doing, right? They had all studied his movements. They had all studied his, like, opening moves, his, like, you know, middle game moves and his closing moves and all that, right? And then he plays against Spassky, and then he has this opening move that just throws everybody off, and everyone's thinking, like, nobody knows what he's doing at the moment, right? And for me, the answer is kind of simple, because I don't play chess, and to me the answer is, like, he's just faking you guys out. Like, there's nothing rational in what he's doing. You know, he just wanted to take a moment to be irrational in the game and throw his opponent completely off. And that's, like, why nobody could figure out what he was doing, was because they were still thinking of the game, like, in rational terms, right? Like, everybody who plays this plays rationally. It's calculated. It's logical. But then, you know, here's this player who's been playing logically their whole life and finally brings it, you know, brings some amount of chaos or irrationality into the game, so that chaos and irrationality becomes a kind of, like, stratagem.
There's a name for that stratagem. It's called the Madman Theory.
The Madman Theory?
Yeah. It's like, make them think you don't know what's coming. Nixon employed the Madman Theory with, you know, negotiating with China. He says, I want, you know, and he's trying to destabilize their relationship with the Soviet Union, which was strained at the time. And he's saying, you know, he wanted to just present himself as this unpredictable figure. He's like, we want them to think, oh, now Nixon's got his finger on the bomb, you know, we don't know what he's going to do next, right? Mm-hmm. He might even bomb Vietnam, right? So things like that.
What if, when the person in power is actually a madman and it's not a stratagem?
Yeah.
Then how are we supposed to feel?
I never thought it would get to that point.
Well, that'll never happen.
So oh, okay. Thank God.
Yeah. It's impossible.
A close friend of mine once said, he's like, I would not have believed, like, eight, you know, whatever, however many years ago, that, you know, before this happened, that it actually happened.
Yeah.
It was going to happen, and it did.
Yeah.
If you told me, like, this was going to happen in 2 years, like, 2 years before, I would not have believed you.
I think we need a break.
Oh, yes, I think we do too.
And we're back! Each Each episode of Extreme Vocabulary features a piece of literature that uses today's word. Hi, Efren.
Hey, how are you doing?
What do you have today?
Today I'm excited and because I have a piece from 1820. It's called Traits of Indian Character by the person who's sometimes considered the first American writer, Washington Irving. And interestingly, that its use of strategem directly linked to something we were just talking about, warfare. Now keep in mind, this piece by Irving is him trying to sort of contemplate the Indians, right? Native Americans, and talking about their different qualities, and at times it sort of dips into some racially iffy things, but I did find that the use of strategem is pretty illustrative here, so I'm going to read the quote. This is from a Traits of Indian Character. We stigmatize the Indians also as cowardly and treacherous because they use strategem in warfare in preference to open force. But in this, they are fully justified by their rude code of honor. They are early taught that stratagem is praiseworthy. The bravest warrior thinks it no disgrace to lurk in silence and take every advantage of his foe. He triumphs in the superior craft and sagacity by which he has been enabled to surprise and destroy an enemy. So,
no, go ahead.
So I think it's interesting that it just so happens, we didn't plan this ahead of time, that we have the idea of war and also like different strategies of war against the different powers here also. Yeah, so I don't know what you all thought.
Aaron?
So is Irving like criticizing our way of viewing them, native culture and their, you know, values as far as, you know, how to engage in warfare, or is he perpetuating the, you know, oh, these savages with their, you know, underhanded tactics, maybe we shouldn't blame them because they're taught this and whatever, and it's even though it's backwards, like what is his angle here?
I think he thinks he's sort of having a more measured view of Indians, you know. In reality though, I think you're right in that it's sort of contradictory the way he sort of the way he's describing them, right? Their rude code of honor, right? It, like, the bravest warrior thinks it no disgrace to lurk in silence. Yeah. So just in the language of what he's saying, we can see that there's some kind of objectification.
Right. The chivalric code is still alive and well in his, you know, in his mind and in society's mind. It's like, you don't operate this way, you know? You face your enemy and you shoot them, you know, and you load your musket quickly or else you get shot again. You don't do these underhanded, like, tactics at night, you know? You ask somebody today, like, you know, it's like, look, SEAL team, right? Of course, this is how they operate. You know, this is just like, it's just smart. It's just, this is how you get ahead. Cutthroat, right? Cutthroat business.
Yeah.
I had a couple thoughts. Hi, I'm Josh.
Hi, Josh.
One, I think it's interesting that he's talking about stratagem. When it was, now we know that the Revolutionary War was fought with guerrilla warfare.
Mm-hmm.
Also, it's interesting to remember that the whole image of the noble savage was a reaction to the image of the savage as like a treacherous, conniving Indian giver comes to mind. So.
Yeah. I think Nathaniel Hawthorne had written a story, I forgot what it was called. Which was all about, it was called My Kinsman Major Molyneux or something like that. And it's about the American Revolution and like all the American revolutionaries had painted themselves in Indian makeup and they were wearing like Indian outfits and all that in order to engage in like guerrilla warfare. So, you know, it sounds a little bit strange that, you know, Washington Irving is, you know, planting that kind of strategy on the Indians, right? And it's like, well, you know, the revolutionaries also use that strategy at the same time, or the stratagem.
Were they using that? I mean, were they doing that because this is going to be effective for us? Or was the take that this is going to be an effective strategy or a stratagem? Or was it that, like, we need to protect our honor because if we were a real military, we would face them on the open field? You know what I mean? So we're going to, like, go in essentially blackface, right, to take on this opposing force? I wonder. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either.
That's a good question. That's like the the topic of somebody's article, probably, right? It's like trying to figure that out. I'm wondering if you all thought, I mean, it really is, seems to be highlighted here, if stratagem is racialized, if we call certain types of practices of warfare or battle stratagem with this sort of anxiety, right? Or if it's called that with anxiety, and maybe if other people do it, it's something different. It's called like mastery of military strategy or sort of tactics. I just thought about that right now, like if it's racialized.
Yeah, I mean, like, so, you know, like, the U.S. could criticize the Vietnamese and say, oh, look at these cowards using guerrilla warfare or something like that, right? Like, they're hiding in the trees and ambushing us when we don't know what's up. They should just confront us, you know, head to head. But it's convenient for them to say that, though, because they know that in a head-to-head combat, they can win, you know? So it's kind of like, let's extol our virtue and make that the right way of fighting.
What a snowflake move. A bunch of hothouse flowers can only thrive in ideal conditions.
Yeah. So, like, whatever way I fight is the best way to fight. I guess what I'm saying is, like, no, in a way, nobody likes the sucker punch move, right? Like, the sucker punch move is, like...
That's why it's called sucker punch.
Yeah, it's
makes you feel like a sucker.
But, like... I mean, YouTube is full of those videos, though, and they're all awesome.
Well, there's...
I was going to say, you know, we agree on certain boundaries of war tactics, right? Like, there are the UN conventions, there's, like, we're not going to torture, that is actually a problem. But there's no... There isn't this sort of, like, but there's no trickery, right? There's no rules about, okay, so you have to meet on the open battlefield. So I think that there is kind of an awareness that, like, this is all is fair in love and war, mostly, right? In terms of sneakiness.
Yeah, or in the case of, like, imperialist power, it's like, well, you can't do that, but we're going to secretly do this and hope nobody figures out we're doing that and stuff. When you said sucker punches, I thought of... And now we're getting totally off the literature, but, like, you know, like... it's just like when you see those fights on YouTube and then, like, somebody uses, like, some wrestling or jiu-jitsu and they're like, oh, that's not fair.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm like, this is a fight, you know what I mean? So it's like there's always rules that are like you're supposed to have, but they're always broken.
Arbitrary, yeah.
I've been listening to a lot of Walter Mosley as I ride my bike around town, and his whole thing is like the guy's a boxer and he's like, I've trained in the ring, but when you're in the street, it's not the same thing. Like, fair enough, man, fair enough.
Yeah, so I do think that he is racializing stratagem, right, and saying like these are the subpar strategies that, you know, these other people, these others use.
Low cunning and tactics, yeah.
Yeah.
But he says that, I think he's saying that from a kind of, what sounds like a position of what you could say is power, right? Of saying, again, like, we get to make up the rules because we can win these wars or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't use this word today to mean the same thing, right? Like, it's sort of, in some ways, it's sort of disappeared from the...
It's a bit antique, yeah. Mm-hmm. The reason I chose this word, or at least suggested it, and everyone just kind of went along with it like good sheep, of course, is I was watching a series called The Borgias. Actually just Borgia. It was a different version, not the Showtime version, which is, I think, a little more popular here in the U.S. It was done by Neil Jordan. Good and bad to it, I saw it, and it was ended after the second season. But Borgia, which was a European venture, he did it with Studio Canal, I believe, or it wasn't him, it was a different writer. The guy who did Oz, the creator of Oz, did Borgia, and again with his European backers. And anyways, he got a bunch of actors, you know, primarily the guy who played Cesare Borgia, who's like the, you know, our anti-hero, I guess, not really hero, pretty, you know, dastardly guy. And he's an illegitimate bastard son of the, same thing, of the Pope, and along with his sister and his brother, and, you know, it was a whole family, basically. And so once Rodrigo Borgia becomes Pope, and then all of a sudden his bastardized children are, it's okay, because he's the Pope, and they can, you know, come out and be open about it, basically. And, you know, he has grand plans of one son in the cloth and one son in armor. And the older son, Juan, you know, got the honor of being the soldier. And Cesare was supposed to be the priest. unfortunately, you know, Juan was a terrible soldier and just a, you know, just a terrible human being in general. And he ended up, Cesare ended up scheming to, you know, replace him and had him killed. It's kind of dubious if he really did or not. But anyways, knowing his character, it's not, you wouldn't be surprised. So anyways, he becomes like this general and for the papal army and the papal states and trying to conquer the other areas that are not complying and just kind of tried to carve an empire, essentially. You know, France is involved, Spain, and it's just like, it's too much to get into. But anyways, if he ends up becoming like a duke of in like a province of France and marries, some royal lineage woman from France to get their, you know, help and alliances, you know, in his wars. And so he ended up becoming the Duke of Valentinois, and they would call him Il Valentino in Italian, you know, Duke of Valentinois, Count of Diwan. He's got all these titles and everything just to give him legitimacy. And then, you know, and then towards the end, he's, you know, on the rocks and he's, you know, lost a lot of battles and he's still trying to make a comeback. And he's like this desperate figure at this point. He's all unshaven and, you know, raggedly dressed and, you know. And he was telling his generals, he's like, I've devised a stratagem and I'm going to succeed and this and that. And it's always like, and he's trying to sell it basically to these guys, and these guys are like not buying it at this point because he's on the downfall and it's the end is near for him. Shortly thereafter, he shipped to Spain, and that's where he meets his end eventually in his family's home country. But anyways, so the stratagem comes in because it's the desperate man is trying to impress, and he's, I've got a stratagem. It's like his big thing. He's like trying to make that big sale on you, the hard sell, and it's just not working. It's pathetic, actually. Mm-hmm. And I just thought, well, we should look up stratagem. I love that word now. I don't know why. It just like, it was one of those things the cosmos told me, like, we got to do this. And it's borne a lot of good fruit.
So yeah. You spent all those hours watching that show, and your one thought about it was, yeah, we should do stratagem.
Among many things, yeah.
All right.
This is what OCD does to you sometimes.
Efren, I wanted to ask you about poker.
Mm-hmm.
So what stratagems do people use in poker?
Yeah, I mean, poker...
Which ones have you used?
I've used them all. For most people know poker now, but it's basically you don't want your opponent... You want your opponent to act according to how you want them to act. In other words, if you have a, let's say you have a strong hand, you want them to call you. If you have a weak hand, you want them to fold. So but you can't act according to what you have. You have to like fool them. You have to use stratagem to make them believe you have the hand you want them to think they have. So, and because poker is like it's an imperfect information game, you could have the opportunity to do it in that way.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, like, at the very beginning, poker players, they'll often like act the opposite of the hand they have, right? Like they'll like just like, if they're really strong, they'll try to act really weak, and they'll have their body language backward. But that's a beginner trying to do the exact opposite. But like people who are really experienced at poker, they have all kinds of weird fake tells, and they twitch their eye when they don't have to, or like, so it's fooling people, misleading them.
I think Doyle Brunson, you know who he is, right?
Yeah.
Famous player, old timer. He said his favorite way of telling if somebody's bluffing or a little, it's the nervousness, the blood starts pumping. Yeah. Even there, like when you're kind of bluffing and your heart starts racing a little bit, the carotid artery right here, it starts, you can see it moving. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, that's a good move.
Kind of wear turtlenecks.
Yeah.
That's why some poker players wear scarves. Like if you watch TV, they're wearing scarves, and my dad's like, why are they wearing the scarf? It's like to cover their artery.
Yeah.
Because is that like, so is that a sign that's difficult to feign? Like your
body's reaction.
Blood pressure.
Yeah, your physical reaction.
Yeah, you can't fake, it's hard to fake that.
Yeah. Because I've been there, like, yeah, you're faking or something, or you got a big hand and you're like excited and you're trying to not show it, and then your heart's just racing because you know what's coming, right?
Mm-hmm. So unless you're a ninja and then you can fake your blood pressure.
Yeah. Oh yeah, or a yogi where you can kind of control your body's, your blood pressure and all these things.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of ninjas, I think they had some of the best stratagems, I think, right? Because, again, they knew that they couldn't fight against the samurai.
Yeah, and same story. You know, the samurai ninja has no honor.
Yeah.
And then, of course, they're like, hey, but I get the job done, don't I?
Yeah.
They keep hiring me.
Yeah, so they do different things, like, you know, they employ smoke to their advantage, right, and things like that.
Shuriken.
Like, yeah. Anything, right, that would throw
poison.
Off the samurai.
Poison as well, too, right?
Yeah.
That's another one that gets maligned. You know, poison is the coward's tactic.
Yeah, because the point is you don't want direct combat, right? Because you lose in that end direct combat, so you have to do other things in order to win.
Right.
And I think that's what Sun Tzu is talking about, right? That, like, the art of war is really the art of deception. It's always about deceiving your enemy, so that...
So if knowledge is power, then to be unknown is to be unconquerable.
So we're going to take a break so that we can remain unconquered.
Go for it. You are.
So thinking about the word stratagem in music, I'm wondering if every love song is not... in its heart, embodying the concept of stratagem. Thoughts?
You mean like deceiving the woman into falling in love with you or something?
Yes, that is exactly what I'm talking about.
I'm a great guy, I'm always gonna be true and faithful, and I'm gonna be a millionaire.
Right?
Is that the stratagem of words then? Is it all just, like, the stratagem is the stratagem of words? It's like...
It's all rhetoric, it's all convincing and persuading, yeah.
I remember Bill Maher has this comedy bit where he's, I mean, not that I'm a big fan of him or whatever, but like where he talks about Tom Jones and how Tom Jones, like, he's singing to the crowd and he's making all the people there feel like he's singing directly to them. And then afterwards, he's like having sex with like 8 groupies. And there's this like weird sort of like stratagem to what he's doing, right? He's like making everyone believe he's like singularly in love with them or something. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so maybe that has something to do with music.
So what's new, Pussycat? Are you proposing that one as our outro?
Oh, no. Are we supposed to actually think of the song?
Well, something.
Stratagem? You
know, I don't think stratagem's in any lyrics that I can think of, honestly. It'll take 10 years maybe to figure that out, if at all.
Joy Division. I feel like there's something by Joy Division, right?
It sounds like it would be.
Hmm. I wouldn't even know the name of the song, though.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's why we have phones and stuff. Stratagem sounds like a word that's not going to appear in any kind of
lyrics. It doesn't rhyme with anything.
No, strategy.
Stratagem.
I got my Benjamins. Stratagems and Benjamins. That's my new hit song, guys.
Hold on, I think we found something.
Uh-oh.
The Google machine? No, never mind. It's a false.
Does the Oracle alarm?
Josh, do you have thoughts about music and stratagem? What's your stratagem when you're writing a song?
I guess I like this idea that all songs are a secret ploy to achieve some end.
Get laid?
I mean, I don't know.
Is that too crass? I'm sorry.
I started it.
I think getting laid is just a metaphor for feeling accepted by others. You know, the fact you just want to feel accepted by others. Getting laid is just the weird thing that comes along with it, don't you think? You just want to, like, put yourself out there in the world. But in doing so, you accidentally put your penis out into the world, you know? But it's an accident.
That happens to me all the time. All the time I feel that way.
There's actually a song by Big Head Todd and the Monsters titled Stratagem.
Oh, what? I remember that band.
I hope it's a good song.
Big Head Todd and the Monsters. I don't know the song, but
let's check it out.
Titled Stratagem.
It's better than what I was going to propose.
And maybe it is about somebody's penis being out in public. I don't know.
I don't mean in public. I just
mean not in a creepy way.
Wait a minute. Here it comes.
Give it a second. It has to go into space and then return.
Like that airplane.
Is it good enough?
Oh, wait. I can't do
this work. Won't you tell me in the
morning? Yeah, that's gonna work.
I think it's a little country well.
Oh, is it my time to go out?
Yeah.
I was deceiving you at that point. Thanks for listening to Extreme Vocabulary. Our music is from Arnold Palmer Golf. By Big Head Todd and the Machine.
No.
You want me to read it for reals? Thanks for listening to Extreme Vocabulary. Our music is from Arnold Palmer Golf, which is a video game, not the musician, by Tokuhiko Uwabo and Wagyan. Paradise. By Erica Imura.
Eriko.
Okay, this is written Erica. Email us at extremevocabulary@gmail.com or find us at Twitter at extremevocab. See you next time.
It's supposed to be
Eriko,
right?
Struggling with that.
Eriko.